let's give this one a go. I missed a week because I spent last week just stressing out and feeling like shit about not being able to find a job, and that my current work was meant to be ending on the 30th, but I just got a message today from my manager that I'm going to be on back again for another month. So, small victories, take them where you can. I mean, yeah, I knew that my contract was ending for a while, so I was like, Jesus, I should start applying for other jobs. Then I was like, hang on, I've already been doing that for the past 8 months. So, I didn't get around to doing an episode of this. I certainly could have. I didn't fucking feel like it, which means that, yeah, a smaller episode has become slightly bigger again because I've just been saving a little bit of stuff throughout the week. I'm trying to prioritize things a bit more and what's actually worth fucking talking about. It's interesting. I've finally plugged some headphones into my interface, and now I can hear myself a bit better. I mean, I could hear myself when I was recording before, but that was a bit more acoustic. Now I'm getting a better sense of what's coming through the microphone. I tried plugging into the computer, but that didn't quite work, because since I run a couple of effects on the old voice here, and so it meant that there was a delay. And I don't know if you've ever tried to talk with a delay of yourself, but it really fucks you around. It's coming to be better, a lot better. This is nice. So we'll get into things here. Here's one by Gizmodo, because I couldn't find this anywhere else. It says, Twitter, sorry for putting COVID-19 misinformation labels on your oxygen tweets. No, it was another one that's going to come up. I couldn't find anywhere else. This one, I'm only talking about this because I saw it on Twitter the few times that I go on there looking at memes and shit. I saw this coming up, people just tweeting out shit about oxygen frequency and 5G. And, yeah, it came up with a label underneath about getting the truth about COVID-19. So it turns out that maybe that when you run this massive media platform and you just let anyone say anything on there, you can't solve the problem of misinformation by automating it. So it's quite interesting. Like, imagine saying to someone, explaining to a person who isn't across all the bullshit going on the internet, that you have to, that 5G, the new mobile service, and oxygen frequency is somehow related to the virus that's causing a pandemic right now. Unfortunately, that's the case. So you could tweet out anything. There's got some examples down here. So here's one from the Tom Zone, at the Tom Zone, that's not me. It says, 5G can be used to stream oxygen, the channel for women. And yeah, that'll have the little thing come up. So we'll move on, because that's just stupid. Fuck Twitter. No need to talk about that any further. Okay, here's one from ABC. Deputy Chief Medical Officer says Victorian coronavirus outbreak is not a second wave, which sounds a lot like what someone would say when there is a second wave, but I think he's true. We're still in the first wave, which is probably worse. As it says here, Deputy Chief Medical Officer Michael Kidd has praised Victoria for its handling of recent coronavirus outbreaks, while also issuing a warning to young people to take the virus seriously. I reckon the biggest problem with this was any speculation of tapering off restrictions whilst the virus was still in the country, because if you tell people that things are going to ease up eventually, then they'll think that that gives them free license to go back to doing what they were before right now. So Andrew Annuals has been doing an all right job with things, but he shouldn't have been talking about easing restrictions whilst we're still fighting this shit. Here's the key points in the article. Health authorities say the response to the outbreaks in Victoria are going exactly as planned. Professor Michael Kidd is urging young people in particular to take COVID-19 seriously. As of Sunday afternoon, and I think this was last Sunday, not the Sunday just been, there are 11 people in hospital and one intensive care with the virus. Because if this was from last week, things have only just gotten worse. I don't know about you, I've just been staying inside, I've been doing fuck all, treating it like it was a, you know, still March, April type kind of year. So just stay the fuck inside and, yeah, don't do anything. It's a little bit sad though, if Andrew Annuals is the one doing the best on things here, that why isn't there a bigger outbreak in the rest of the country? Is it just because we're the second most populous city and people in Sydney just hate going outside as is? Fuck it. All right. Here we go. Here's another one from SBS. One person dead after shooting at US Black Lives Matter rally. Yeah, so one person was killed, another wounded in a shooting at Black Lives Matter rally in the US state of Kentucky. The incident Saturday took place at Jefferson Square Park in the center of Louisville, where protesters have gathered for weeks over the killing of African-American woman Breonna Taylor. Now, I highlighted a bit here down the bottom, a bit of context around her, if you need reminding. The 26-year-old emergency room technician was shot dead after police barged into a home alleging that drug dealers had used the apartment to receive packages. Now, further context to that is she was in bed asleep at the time, and they shot her, and that apparently the person that they thought was dealing drugs out of the place had actually been arrested hours earlier. So they busted in, shot her while she was asleep in bed. I mean, imagine she probably wasn't asleep when it happened, but it's one of those things. You would be quite distraught if you got woken up by police bashing down your door. Unfortunately, this is American police, so any state of mind you're in when that happens will be taken as open invitation to shoot you. So, on top of everything around Black Lives Matter, there's been a justice for Breonna Taylor, because no one involved with her murder, let's just call it what it is, has been charged. So let's see, let's have a look for further details here. So Louisville Metro Police Department said officers were called to the park around 9 p.m. Calls then came in that Sheriff's Department personnel were trying to park for life-saving measures on the mail. Yeah, it doesn't seem any details about it. And this is another thing I don't get. All these crazy right-wing death cult motherfuckers over there in the States. What do they think this is going to achieve? This is just going to extend the protests and everything. But that's probably exactly what they want, because they want more open targets like this. Well, you just got to persist with this shit, because those motherfuckers are crazy. And, yeah, unfortunately, the police are not going to stop killing people until they have no money left and don't exist. Here's the one from Gizmodo I had in mind. This group got Tech Twitter hyped on an app that doesn't exist to raise money for BLM charities. So, what this is I can't remember the name of the actual product. I think it was, they call it Is What It Is, or there was something around the emoji combination using a bunch of question marks. Who gives a shit? The way I saved this and why I liked it was this reminded me of how every couple of years there'll be all this hype in the tech press around some stupid new social media that was like, oh, it only lets you send hi to people. It only lets you communicate in emojis. And there's all this buzz. It raises ridiculous amounts of money. Then it comes out. Everyone realizes that you can do fuck all in the thing. And then it just dies. That you'd think all these people would realize by now that the only apps that have any legs are the ones that allow people to subvert legislation and rule of law. You know, much like how things like Uber was able to circumvent all laws and everything put in place around taxis. Airbnb allowed you to become your own personal hotel and be an even shitter landlord with short-term tenants. That a fucking app that only lets you send the peach emoji to people does not facilitate anything like that. But what a group of people did is they started buzz over what was going to be a similar app like that. They had a shitty website where you could go on there, build up all this buzz, and then I think when it was meant to be the announcement, it just, around midnight, the website's been changed to read, It Is What It Is, We're Live, followed by instructions for users to donate to charities to support the black community like Loveland Foundation, Okra Project, and the Innocence Project, and share their receipt in order to learn more. Oh, I see, because I was wondering, like, how do they get people to actually donate when it was revealed to be a trick? So that's what it is. They were like, donate to learn more about this bullshit app. And then people donated, and it's like, surprise, the bullshit app, which wouldn't have done anything anyway, does not exist. So that's that one. That's good for them. Raised a bit of money, played some fools. Hopefully they'll learn their lesson and no one will be able to pull that trick again. All right, here's one I got from The Socialist. Robo-debt, government stole $720 million from society's poorest. What I think they're factoring in here was the cost of implementation. I think robo-debt only brought back in about $10 million more than it cost to roll out. Anyway, it was a stupid, cruel program that the government should never have done, but they want to vilify those on welfare and who need support because it plays well with their base, that they want to give the impression that anyone who needs money from the government is lazy and not working, and not that you could apply for hundreds of jobs over the course of 8 months and still not find one, and may end up needing to go on the dole, and not that there are wider systemic issues which make it too hard to find work, that everything is over-processitized, and so you can't just walk down to the work-wanted place and stand out the front until they say, yes, we need men, and go and work for a day. So this says here, the ruling means the government will be forced to pay back $720 million to welfare recipients. Oh, so it is the whole thing. Who received unlawful robo-debt invoices, notices. At least 75% of money brought in by the scheme will need to be repaid or wiped. This was part of it too. That it was just, it seemed ridiculously expensive for something that was just trying to reconcile Centrelink account information with like the ATO or something. And yeah, part of the problem was no one verified it. They just sent these things out if there was a discrepancy. And even if it wasn't the case, it then came down to you, the recipient of the notice, to prove that, instead of them to issue. It says PM Scott Morrison originally refused to make an apology, but conceded under huge public pressure. Opinion polls indicated that 74% of Australians felt the government should apologise. And so, yeah, this is The Socialist, so it goes on to say, Morrison's forced apology is totally fake. The government had warnings early as March 2016 that debt automation could lead to incorrect debts being issued. Despite warnings, the scheme was seriously flawed. Yeah, it was all flawed. Everything was fucked. They shouldn't have done it, but what do you expect? And we voted them back in, didn't we? So, great. I can't wait for the next thing they're going to do. Like, probably they're going to just let JobSeeker revert back to its previous rates in September and won't raise it at all. So, looking forward to it. And that's been one of the big motivators for me to, unfortunately, you know, try to find other work, or at the very least just extend my contract beyond September, is I'm like, sure, I could go on JobSeeker and make enough to get by and have no fucking savings, but it ends in September, and my lease ends in October. So what the fuck am I supposed to do then? Everything's fucked, everything's shit. Here's another one from SBS. Google to pay Australian news outlets for content. So it's pretty much just what it says there. That Australian news outlets are among the first to go into licensing agreements with Google, which has announced it will pay for publishers to present their stories. The internet giant's news experience product will feature on Google News and Google Discover and will launch next year. There seems to be some shitty side app where instead of, say, Googling for something, you know, hidden in your old search bar at the Omnibar, I think they fucking call it in Google Chrome, and clicking an article from there, seems like you might only get paid if you use their specific app, which no one will. And the statement does not explain how the content will be presented to users, nor does it say how much revenue it expects to bring in by offering the new product. Probably, knowing Google, it will be fuck all, because they're the ones that run all the display ads which were meant to power things before, and through a mix of decreasing revenue share from those and ad blockers, that's become unsustainable. As this one says, it's the only thing of note that I included here. Until now, Google has stubbornly refused to pay content from news publishers and other media, putting it at odds with some companies, including German publishing giant Axel Springer. So it's pretty much that. They know that pretty much trying to find articles is the main thing people use Google for, but they didn't want to pay out, and I think they're doing this just as a means to stay in the good books. Here's another one from The Guardian. Facebook says it doesn't need news stories for its business and won't pay to share them in Australia. So this was a similar thing. I think Facebook and Google were caught up in the same proposal, and Facebook said no, they will not pay people, they won't pay publishers for news stories, because they reckon that Facebook would get along fine without it. There's a couple of interesting things here. In its submission to the watchdog, Facebook said it rejected many of the ACCC's potential ideas and said there was a healthy rivalry between itself and news organizations. Yeah, that rivalry is that everything gets shared on Facebook and is one of the main reasons people go on there, and Facebook won't pay anyone for it. And Facebook was telling everyone to pivot to video, and so they gutted and restructured their newsrooms around this advice, and then it turns out that video wasn't actually as big a deal as Facebook made it out to be. They lied on their metrics and stats around video and didn't tell anyone. Also, Facebook said it could cut out news completely without any significant impact on its business. You know what? I fucking wish they would. That if we got rid of news and politics from Facebook, it would be a somewhat nicer service to use. Not that I do use it, and not that this would entice me back. Really, it was just meant to be about, like, what, fucking baby pictures, food pictures, holidays, all that sort of shit. It's that when it got into sharing news articles and all that, that's when shit went fucked. But, of course, they say they don't need news on there, but they're still going to allow articles on there. And a big part of that, this is somewhat of an aside, but they're still going to take political advertising, aren't they? That this is a big cause of a lot of the debate and why people feel like they need to be kept up to date on Facebook. And they're just going to let it happen. There's a bunch of other shit in this article. It's like, who gives a fuck? Facebook said it had sent 2.3 billion clicks to Australian news publishers in the 5 months from January to May 2020, which they estimated to be worth $195.8 million to the news organizations. Yeah, that's only from the shitty Google AdSense payout on those. Yeah, let's not forget that Facebook tried to roll out instant articles, which was just news on Facebook ad-free, so you didn't get the traffic or the impressions, anything on your own website if you tried to do those. So they've tried to do everything they could to circumvent actually leaving Facebook and keeping all the users and all the money inside their own walled garden, but just haven't been able to make it stick because they don't want to admit that everybody actually fucking hates Facebook and looking for an excuse to get off there. It also says there was a part down the bottom here saying that it was unfair the ACCC to target two US businesses, even though they're both fucking massive. Yeah. The decision to limit the initial version of the code to two US companies is discriminatory and will inevitably give an unfair advantage to Facebook's competitors in the technology sector. I remember when Zuckerberg had to sit before Congress, he couldn't name a Facebook competitor because both Google and Facebook, they're pretty much monopolies. They stand alone. And it's even like one of those things that, sure, there's a bunch of other search engines out there, but nothing else has all the same level of shit that Google does. Same deal with Facebook. That there might be other social networks, but none that have the same base and are as comprehensive as Facebook, even just the initial product, not even factoring in shit like Instagram and WhatsApp and all the auxiliary products put into Facebook, just what it does. There's no fucking competition. So I, for one, wouldn't stand for that bullshit of saying that it would help the competitors, because there are no fucking competitors. All right, here's another one from Mumbrella. ABC axes ABC Life, comedy, and up to 250 jobs as part of 5-year plan. So, yeah, this is, I remember listening to, I believe it was an ABC podcast, it would have been middle of last year, because it was before the election, that ABC pretty much had two projected plans of what it was going to do going forward based on which party won, because they knew that if the Liberal Party got in, that they would be facing significant cuts, and if Labour got in, probably slightly less cuts, but they'd be a lot more complicated. I don't know. But this is, just saying that a bunch of shit is going to get axed because they're just not getting the same money they were going to. So there was a number getting thrown around of $84 million that were being cut, but it's more than that. There's what's his fucking official title? Managing Director of the ABC, David Anderson, said The federal government's indexation pause, which effectively cut the ABC's budget by $84 million over 3 years, with an ongoing reduction of $41 million a year from 2022, combined with the $64 million in ongoing cuts imposed in 2014, made these kinds of announcements inevitable. So, let's see. That means measures rebranding ABC Comedy, formerly ABC 2, to a range of home genres such as... I was never really on board with the rebrand of ABC 2. It was like ABC for kids during the day and then ABC Comedy at night. I just liked ABC 2. It was like the cooler ABC. The said comedy programs will still be commissioned for its primary channel and main destination streaming platform, iView. Independent production budgets will be slashed by $5 million per year, predominantly from the factual and entertainment slate. Now the victim is the 7:45 a.m. radio news bulletin. ABC said it needs to focus on digital and on-demand services. Broadcast also reduced travel budgets by 25% and will review its delivery portfolio. 75% of content makers will work away from Ultimo by 2025. Yeah, everything's fucked. Hope you're not trying to get a job in media anytime soon. Hope you're not trying to, make a fucking TV show here in Australia. Hope you're not trying to get the word out about anything. Because the state-run broadcaster who would usually handle that shit can't afford to do anything anymore. I think it's just going to be the BBC reruns show. Not that you can buy the DVDs anymore, because they had to shut down the ABC stores a couple of years ago. Everything's fucked. Fuck this government. All right, here's a bit of a uplifting change of pace here from PC Gamer. Best friend forever is the heartwarming dog adoption sim I needed in my life. So, this is... I saw this. It just looked like a very cute game. Where there's a Shiba Inu called Cheeseball. It's a girl. You can adopt a dog. You've got to train it over the course of a couple of weeks. And then there's also a dating sim. Where you date people. Very diverse range of people. Very diverse range of dogs. The link's going to be in the show notes if you want to check it out. There's a demo. There's a free demo. I just realized I should have been archiving stuff because I need to put those links in later. Fuck it. I'll work around it. Here's another one from the New Daily. How the Queen's Palace Letters Could Reignite an Australian Republic. So this is pretty much just about quick history. Prime Minister Gough Whitlam was dismissed by the Governor-General. He pretty much acts in the Queen's stead. And it was pretty much for a mix of things, of having too progressive agenda, too much public spending, being against the Vietnam War, and the presence of the US military in Australia. There's a bunch of different speculations. I'm thinking that he was a bit of a CIA asset, that he's working in the interest of Richard Nixon. There was a lot going on. But as it says here, the 211 letters will be released by the National Archives of Australia next month, at a time when the ferment in the United States has prompted many nations to reassess the colonial injustices of the past. So yeah, that's also talking about how this was announced in the middle of, pandemic and, the race war in the States and everything else. So it was easy to slip people by. But then, we're talking about the Australian Republican movement here. And if there was an opportunity to fuck up a major announcement like this, they'd find a way to do it. So just a bit more talk here around the context of what happened. Like, here's the big thing that Mr. Whitlam wrote in The Truth of the Matter, that when told by Sir John that he had been dismissed, he asked him, "Have you discussed this with the palace?" Sir John replied, "I don't have to, and it's too late for you." Mrs. Hocking, I need to look up who that is, who fought to have the palace letters released, said Sir John's unprecedented communications with the Queen, while failing to discuss the possibility of dismissal with his Prime Minister, required full scrutiny. So, it's really this, that Sir John... Well, I forget his full name somewhere. He just pretty much decided to get rid of Gough Whitlam. I don't think he actually did consult the Queen or anyone before doing so. And the whole sacking of Gough Whitlam is unfortunately the only juice that the Republican movement has, even though it happened like 1974-75 around then. The arms of the state that are meant to work in the stead of the crown ousted a prime minister for rather self-centered reasons. Look, there's a lot of other stuff here. There's some things from Peter Fitzsimons, who's the head of the Australian Republican Movement. I'll tell you one thing I was impressed with was same day as the Brexit vote, he had an article out. He probably had it pre-written already. But, yeah, there's nothing... like the only things that are really going to change people's perspective on it is like seeing what happened with Brexit and when the Queen dies. That everyone feels like when it comes to the Republican movement, they have to wait till the Queen goes because she's too inoffensive for anyone to have strong opinions on, and that no one likes Prince Charles. So we're really just going to have to wait. Here's another one from PC Gamer. Hilux 2 feels like a long-lost RPG from the 70s. Yeah, oh man, I saw this one. I don't think there's a Hilux 1, that's just part of the name. But this game, it looks like the Surreal Memes subreddit turned into a game. It's got like all this weird, like stop motion, like claymation stuff for the figures with like the real heavy shadowing and all that, you know, look like some shit from an old movie. Those weird, like negative, inverted, sweeping backgrounds, all that sort of stuff. It's a trip. I saw a trailer for it. It's pretty interesting. So that's one to have a look at. All right, here's one from Vice. Mixer, Microsoft's Twitch competitor and home to Ninja, that's the Fortnite streamer, is dead. So, yeah, it's pretty much that. I don't know if you heard about Mixer before. I heard about it reading shit when this guy Ninja moved over there, and then that was it. It existed, didn't do anything, and now they're like, yeah, no one gave a shit, so we're closing it down. It just seems odd that they couldn't deliver on anything. I mean, it's Microsoft. They've got servers all over the world. They could handle, you know, a big streaming platform. They could advertise the shit out of it. Probably part of the problem is that they're probably like, oh, we'll just promote shit through the Xbox. You know, the Xbox One was a significantly less popular console this round. Not as many people bought it. So, unfortunately, all the messaging you could put on the home screen of your Xbox One, only a few people are going to see it. Part of it is like this Ninja reportedly signed a deal worth between $20 and $30 million to leave Twitch and stream exclusively on Mixer. So, that's unfortunate as it is for everyone else. It doesn't seem like Ninja would give a shit either way. It's just, this part's kind of funny. Now Microsoft has run out of patience with that strategy. This was the strategy of just paying a shit ton of money to Twitch's biggest streamers to make them move over to Mixer. Most of Mixer's streamers found out the news of its impending destruction the same way as the world did, by reading it in a tweet. As of this writing, Mixer is a wall of streamers close to tears, some angry, and all blindsided by the news. Man, I wish I kept it on top of this shit a bit more. It would have been interesting to go on there the moment that the closure of Mixer was announced and see the three other streamers on there that aren't Ninja and getting their responses in real time. Look, it's unfortunate. Trying to make a living doing streaming and all that sort of thing is a fuck. But it's just, it's hard to feel the sympathy for people, when, you know, streamer, which is, even, you know, more obvious of an unnecessary role and something that, you know, you put a lot of work into yourself rather than just being a job that you get, when one of the platforms for that no one used goes under. Here's one that I won't dwell on for too long, but it's from Junkie, the 100 greatest metal albums of all time. This is more just a thing you can look through yourself. I did. I read a lot of stuff in it. I don't fully agree with it. A lot of things I didn't wasn't familiar beforehand. Kind of a lot of black metal. No Pantera on there. Only one Metallica album, not the biggest one. Only one Mastodon album, and not my favorite. So look, these are always just someone's opinion. They're never right. Never wrong either. But you can go on there, and if anything interests you, help expand your own horizons. So that's that one. Here's one I got from Happy Mag. Iconic Into the Wild bus removed from Alaska due to safety concerns. So I haven't seen Into the Wild, but I know it by reputation. And yeah, they're finally getting rid of it because, according to the Associated Press, Alaska Natural Resources Commissioner Corey Feige said the decision was made due to safety concerns, as two people have died over the years whilst trying to reach the bus, whilst many others have needed rescuing. Now, and this is the thing. Like, I haven't read the book or seen the movie, but I know that the guy in the story, he died at the bus as well. So why are people going to the fucking bus? I get it's there, but the 1940s bus was made famous by Christopher McCandless, the real-life 24-year-old Virginian whose story was depicted in Into the Wild. The bus had initially been used by a construction company, giving employees a place to stay whilst working on roads and in the area. When the construction work stopped in 1961, the bus was abandoned. 3 decades later, McCandless came across the bus and lived there for 114 days before dying of starvation. Why did he live there for almost half a year? How hard was it to get back home? Could he have just headed home in that 114 days instead? I haven't seen the movie. Don't really care to. The only appeal around the bus I can feel like is that, you know, seeing the movie and it was like semi-based on a true story and this guy actually lived there, it would feel like some actual form of history that you could go to the bus and feel like you're having a significant experience. Something that is kind of like lacking in life at the moment. It's like do I have the thing about the geese anywhere? No, I think I left that out as well. But I went up to Riddle's Creek to look at the geese there. I think that was meant to be in last week's episode that is now this one. And I forgot whether I'd done it or not. But I had an article here from the ABC about the creek in, well, the geese in Riddle's Creek. As I was looking at stuff to do there on Google Maps, I saw Hanging Rock was just a bit further up. And I was like, oh, that's the place where that book and that Peter Weir movie is set. I haven't read or seen them, so it would have been lost on me. But just to think like, oh, there's the place from The Thing. You don't get that, especially in this country. You get a bit of that in Europe. Not really in the States either. And I think that's the significance of the bus, is that you can watch the movie and be like, that bus is actually there. We can go to the place where that motherfucker died, just like he did. And now it's gone, which is probably for the best, because too many other people have died, and no one's going to make a movie about them. Alright, ABC. Former High Court Judge Dyson Hayden sexually harassed several associates, inquiry reveals. Yeah, this one's a bit of an older one. A lot more has come out since this thing from the ABC. I just don't like this cunt's name. Dyson Hayden. It's like two last names. I think this was also the guy who was in charge of the Royal Commission into people that Tony Abbott doesn't like, and he fucked it up by doing a speaking engagement at a Liberal Party event. So that then his the report he handed down had to be pretty pointless and toothless because of there was so much perceived bias around him. So, yeah, it turns out that he's a fucking sexual harasser as well. There was a couple of things that I heard weren't in this article, like you know, one of the other events that he's meant to speak at, or he was like a guest of honour, that he sexually harassed some people, and then they escorted him out of there before like his speech or the thing he had to do. So even amongst the conservative fuckwits that this guy seems to, you know, move in, the circles that he moves around, that he sexually harasses people there and they feel like it's too much. So, look, fuck him. I'm glad to see the back of him. I hope they throw the book at him. Because I'd say with all these sorts of things, where there's smoke, there's fire. Okay, here's one from Vice. This one might be a long one. I'll power through this. 16 batshit crazy moments from John Bolton's book about Trump. So John Bolton, he was the war hawk on Iran. I forget which fucking role he had in the White House because it went through it all so quickly. I should know because I wrote a ridiculously extended bit that features him in it. But yeah, he put out a book recently. You know, he didn't testify before the impeachment hearing because he wanted to save everything for the book. So he's not a hero for releasing this thing. But let's quickly just go through everything. Apparently, Trump asked China to help him win the 2020 election. This was just around tariffs, doing them deals there if they helped him out. Yes, it's a big deal, not now with the Trump White House, because we know that nothing would have been done about it anyway. Trump told China's leader that concentration camps are a good idea, that more it was something that Trump would do himself. Bolton says Mike Pompeo called Trump so full of shit. No surprising there. Everyone in the Trump White House hates him and is only there for their own careers. Trump's White House aides were miserable. Again, nothing new. But, heard stories of people that work at the White House lying about their jobs on dates and such because of how bad it is to work there. So it's like, well, you're in Washington, surely you can find a job working for lobbyists, making a lot more money. Trump is impossible to brief. Again, not all that surprising. He doesn't like to read things. He only likes to hear good news about himself. And it says here that Trump set off by a comment that we have no better ally than Japan. Jared Lee complained about Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor. Things went downhill from there. He seems like the sort of person where, if you try to tell Trump something about, try to tell him some news, he'd pick up on one word in it and then go off this massive tangent and it'll be impossible to get him back around. Trump complains in private that he's been too tough on Russia. Yeah, we all know that. He loves Putin, even though he's just Putin's useful idiot. Trump asked Kelly if Finland is part of Russia. I mean, I'm surprised Trump even knows Finland's a country. He probably just heard about it from somewhere. Yes, Trump tried to swap military aid to Ukraine for an investigation of Joe Biden. Yeah, we know. We know. And we all saw how that turned out. Trump said invading Venezuela would be cool. Trump told people that Venezuela is really part of the U.S. and insisted on military options for ousting Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. Yeah, again, I think his opinions on Venezuela are pretty apparent, just with how they seem to relentlessly talk about it on Fox News. And every other podcast was making fun of those guys that tried to invade, and tweeted about it beforehand. Trump said his big summit with Kim Jong-un was all for show. Yeah, everybody knew that. Trump then obsessed for months over sending Kim an Elton John CD. This was a signed Rocketman CD, but apparently not signed by Elton John, signed by Trump, which makes no fucking sense. And again, I don't see why it's such a big deal. Surely Kim Jong-un has a P.O. box, which becomes available for his top donors on his OnlyFans. Trump really wanted to meet Kim Jong-un again, and everyone was trying to stop him because of how pointless the last meeting was. Trump told Turkey's president he'd squash a criminal investigation. This is Etrigan. Would it surprise you to know that not everything that the leader of Turkey does is above board? No, well, he has a friend in Trump, so he's allowed to get away with it. Trump asked Bolton to praise him on TV more. Again, that doesn't seem all that amazing. White House trade policy meetings were college food fights. Again, that Trump just liked to get a bunch of people in the room and watch them argue. Trump asked Attorney General Bill Barr to put journalists in jail. Again, that this would be a big deal any other time, but this is just part of consistent behavior. One thing I was thinking about, though, with Bill Barr, is, his dad was in the OSS, which was like a precursor to the CIA, also involved with the recruitment of Jeffrey Epstein. I think the reason why Bill Barr acts like he does, that this is his country and he's in charge, is pretty much because of the family that he comes from. That his dad was came from a government department that pretty much just ran things and did what they wanted, and he knew that you get military families like that, you just work your way up like he has now. Why wouldn't he think that he's actually in control? That's not about Bolton, though, but fuck Bolton. SBS again, TikTok users say they helped sabotage Donald Trump's Tulsa rally. So that was the rally that he was going to have on Juneteenth, just to carry on about shit. He had all the waivers about catching coronavirus, saying coronavirus isn't real, but if you catch it here, it's not our fault. All that shit, who cares? So, as this article says, however, the 19,000-seat BOK Center Arena had many empty seats on Saturday evening, I don't know why I put a comma in there, and Mr. Trump and Vice President Mike Pence cancelled speeches to an unexpected overflow area outside. This must have just been the thing of how they thought there was going to be, they thought like over a million people had registered interest. Why they thought that many people would actually turn up, I don't know. A Tulsa Fire Department spokesman said the crowd was tallied about 6,200 people. Oklahoma's reported a surge in new coronavirus cases in recent days, and the state's Department of Health has warned those planning to attend they face an increased risk. The Trump campaign said entry was on a first-come, first-served basis and no one was issued an actual ticket. See, this is the thing. Of course they want to try to downplay this and be like, oh, the TikTokers didn't actually play us. But then they're saying, well, we didn't give out any tickets. That it's just anyone who wanted to go could turn up. So it's like the TikTokers registered their interest. The Trump campaign now has their email contact details. And you can't say that because they all registered, that's why no one showed up. Because if people wanted to go, they could have just gone. And only 6,200 people did. So I don't understand how that could spin things into a win for the Trump campaign. But yeah, it was all pretty pathetic. Trump was feeling down about it. I hope that self-reflection lasted more than the 5 minutes it took him to walk from the plane to the car afterwards. There was a video of that going around. It's not going to make a difference. Nothing matters. If he gets voted out, he's not going to leave. They're going to have to pull a Gaddafi on him. Here's another one from Happy Mag. This one's all around, but this is just where I got it from. There's a new Pokemon Snap game coming to the Switch. Yeah, so this is just a nicer, newer version of Pokemon Snap, the game that people have been calling out for a new version of for decades at this point. Pretty much only because they made one and haven't done it since. I actually watched the trailer for this one, and one thing it made me realize that I forgot is, there's been a bunch of generations of Pokemon since the first Pokemon Snap, so there's a lot more creatures that they can put in there. So, seeing like Scorbunny and all the new ones and shit, so there's a lot more that can be done in a Pokemon Snap now than with the original 150, which, because the first one came out so long ago, that's all they had to choose from. So, that's interesting. I mean, it should be good. Here's another just quick one from Vice. Nintendo just released a free exercise Switch game for quarantine. So this is called Jump Rope Challenge. Not Jump Roach Challenge. Either you're jumping over cockroaches or you're jumping and puffing on the blunt. Oh, fuck it. Who cares? But, yeah. So this is a thing where you use the Joy-Cons as imaginary jump rope, and it just makes you ask for 100 jumps a day, starting out, and it's free. So there's something. The other option is play a HoloLive video of a bunch of VTubers playing Ring Fit Adventure on YouTube, which then convinces your girlfriend to go out and buy a Ring Fit Adventure, even though you've been offering to do that for her for weeks, and then you can watch her play that instead. These are all options. Here's another fucking dodgy one from the ABC. Priests eligible for JobKeeper asked to donate the extra allowance to their Catholic diocese. So this is pretty much, summary of this one is that the amount of money that they get from JobKeeper is twice as much as they get paid from their role, because when you live in the church and all that sort of shit, things like room, board, water, bills, that all gets covered for you. So the church was asking them to pay it back in forms of donations because they can't hold mass anymore. And it's like, brah, have you heard of just preaching on Twitch? It's got a donation button built right in. Where it gets tricky, RMIT University Employment Law Specialist Anthony Forsyth said the JobKeeper rules made it illegal for employers to skim money off staff payments to boost revenue. However, a request for voluntary donation was not explicitly prohibited. So it gets messy there. But, it's just why, when they get all these exemptions for being a church and a religion, why do they then get JobKeeper? And you sort of want to ask, like, why do they then need to donate it back when they have a shit ton of money? But again, like, all these businesses that you think are flush with cash are struggling. So maybe, turns out not to be the case. It costs a lot of money doing all these payouts to the little kids that you've touched. As it says here, the ABC has confirmed that 41 priests in the Diocese of Parramatta are currently serving JobKeeper. They saw the income almost double to $3,000 a month from their regular stipend of $1,590. Some priests have described this as a windfall, the anonymous Catholic Church employee said. They already get the housing, food, and utilities paid for by the church. This is $3,000 per month of pure pocket money. Yeah, not that I'd imagine priests would have much to spend that on, aside from candy to lure in the little boys. So that's why they wanted to donate it, probably to remove the temptation. It says that, there's a bit of a problem that not everyone in the diocese is eligible, say, like, if you're not a permanent resident, because that is a group of people that these payments have deliberately omitted. And then After a bit of investigation, the Dai Chiefs backtracked on plan to cut stipend after JobKeeper scheme. So they asked them to give it back, makes donations, and then I think when the ABC went sniffing around, they said, don't worry about it. So there's that one. I mean, does it really surprise you with the fucking church? Like, who cares? Of course they're going to pull this shit. Greedy-ass motherfuckers. I don't even know why they're eligible for JobKeeper when it's not a job. Whatever. Here's the last one. Light tone. This one worked out well. From bnt.com.au. Total genius or gloriously daft stunt. KFC unveils a gaming console complete with its own chicken chamber. So this is pretty much what they say is a gaming console. Yeah, the KFC console. It's almost 3 million views and it's been posted on the KFC gaming Twitter account. That's probably the biggest revelation of all this. Is there is a KFC gaming Twitter account. I wonder if that was just started up for this. But pretty much just what it looks like is a high-spec gaming PC shaped like a KFC bucket. I don't think it's real. The video that's meant to be part of the article, at least trying to view it here through Pocket, doesn't seem to be displaying. So I'm not entirely sure what the deal is here. Fuck it. Yeah, I had two phone calls just now, completely thrown off my train of thought for this the end of this episode. So that's it. That's the end of this one.